Welcome to the True Falls Film Festival.
Should documentaries try to change the world?
Jeez. I start flashing to Bono in moments like this, you know. What was that lyric? I really think a pop song could really change the world. Should documentaries try to change the world? I think documentaries should be what they want to be and be what they need to be.
Welcome to the True False podcast presented by KBIA. I'm Allison Kofeld. In this episode, we talk with film critic Eric Hines about documentary form, its history, and where it's going. Eric has a column at Film Comment, and his work has appeared in the New York Times, Washington Post, and Rolling Stone magazine. Eric spent a year curating the first installment of the Neither Nor series for True False Film Fest. Neither Nor explores how nonfiction film is influenced by and influences fiction filmmaking. Eric's work highlighted documentary in New York in the 1960s. He spoke with True False programmer Chris Bachman.
Maybe we could back up a second to talk a little bit about what it was you were exploring in the first edition of Neither Nor, and what was it that excited you about?
Well, I mean, the idea was basically have a historical antecedents for the sort of films that True False had been championing from the beginning, right? So you've got what might be considered hybrid films or films that were expanding the form of documentary in some way. I mean, I know hybrid is a word worth recoiling from.
It's got to go there, yeah.
But in starting the conversation about exactly what we're talking about, like, it's always good to sort of say, well, that's in a sense what some people might call some of these films. And then the suggestion that if for a first one, New York in the 60s might be the right subject. And I think in retrospect, it certainly was. And what I wound up doing, because I was only going to show four films, you know, it was a pretty limited slate that I could approach. Wasn't something I was going to do a 20-film series or anything like that, which, you know, could have really spanned time and approaches. For me, like, looking into these films, I became very excited about the notion that the greatest concentration of these films that were playing with the documentary form, playing with notions of reality, and as nonfiction, as art, or trained for experimentation, that it was happening between like 66 and 68, like during this incredibly momentous moment in history, and globally, nationally, and in New York, that like this is when like formal experimentation was happening with the greatest frequency. That was an exciting thing to discover, and so then therefore that helped me decide what to show, because there are some great films from like 64, 65, and 69 and 70 that would have been amazing to show. But it was like, well, let's hone it into that, you know, maybe like a 18-month period of time when the world was shifting, you know, when the axis was sort of like shifted over a little bit, and that was happening formally as well.
Do you feel like that kind of exploration stopped or slowed down after 68, or...?
That's a good question. I don't know that it stopped or slowed down, but I think that, I mean, I think you and I talked about the Jonathan Gordon, who's this the sound in Simiopsychotaxoplasm, and then went on to make a very, very good movie, or co-directed a great movie called King Murray, and how that the fate of those filmmakers and the fate of a filmmaker like William Greaves, who made Simiopsychotaxoplasm, and how none of them really kept going in that direction, speaks to, I think, on an individual basis, speaks a little bit to actually like what caused that moment in history is also kind of, and how that moment in history ended and sort of fell apart is also why I think that didn't continue in some ways, that there was a certain sense of collapse and recoil, and Jonathan Gordon like just sort of left New York and just decided to like go figure out something else out west and do some personal discovery. And William Greaves felt like nobody cared at all about the thing that he made and nobody understood it. And so he needed to go back and make more standard documentaries. and you know, David Hoffman, who made King Murray as well, like in some ways, like continued in certain directions, but like he went where the work was, and there was work in music documentaries and things like that. And so it's hard to sustain, just like today, it's hard to make a career as somebody who's expanding the form of documentary unless there's some audience waiting for you or critical understanding of what you're doing. And I'm not sure that moment, that incredibly fertile moment, was embraced and buoyed as much as it could have been.
Coming up after the break, we ask Eric if documentary films are having a moment.
I mean, this is not like the Rubik's Cube. This is not like some, I mean, this is not like a, I don't know. It's hard to call it a fad when it's still something that a smallish group of people are being really passionate about.
Hey listeners, it's Allison. I want to recommend another podcast from you, also from KBIA. It's called Views of the News. Each week, host Amy Simons and her panelists take a look behind the headlines and analyze, criticize, and comment on trends in the media. That's Views of the News from KBIA. Check it out on whatever podcasting app you're using right now. This is the True False podcast presented by KBIA. I'm Allison Kofeldt. Let's get back to Chris Bachman's interview with film critic Eric Hines, who is also a film programmer at the Museum of the Moving Image in New York.
Well, there's a lot of talk that we're in a similar kind of moment right now, or have been for even maybe more than 2 years, I would say. Do you feel like that's true? Are we a...
Yeah. Well, I think that there's a lot of very interesting work being done within nonfiction. And I know you and I have a history of talking about this. I know that you know as well as anybody that there is a long history of experimentation within documentary, a long history of playing with the form, in fact, from the very beginning. So it's not like whatever's happening now is entirely brand new and groundbreaking. What I think is happening, though, is I think that there is a community. I wouldn't say a financial level of support for this, but I do think that there is a community that supports this, and that places like True False is probably a place like True False is probably as responsible as any entity in creating a sense that if you're going to make these types of films, you have a place, and you have a place where your films are going to be shown, and they're going to matter, and people might write about them, and you're going to meet other filmmakers who do this too, and then there are other festivals like Camden and CPH Docs and IDFA and Full Frame to some degree. Like these are places where like these films can play, and if you make it and it's good, people will see it. And I think that winds up leading to emboldening filmmakers to keep going. So I think that's the biggest thing that's happening now, more than all of a sudden the greatest filmmakers ever in documentary are working. I do think there are great filmmakers in the documentary film. It's like, what a great moment to care about expanding the form of documentary, because you have other people who are pushing the envelope, and you're not going to just shout into the dark.
Right.
Do you agree with that? Is that?
Well, you know, I just ran into someone. I'm going to keep her identity a little bit anonymous for the sake of this, but who was claiming that this sort of festival moment that we're talking about, this community that sort of formed around these formerly adventurous documentaries, yeah, that it's like a fad, that it's going to die. And then 10 years, most of these festivals will not be what they are right now,
it's hard to agree with that when I think that a lot of these festivals are doing quite well in terms of audience, in terms of notoriety, and in terms of relevance. You know, anything can happen. Anything can happen at any individual festival. True False could fall into the sea next year. It's possible. Nothing has shown me in the 6 years or so that I've been coming here that that's the case. I see Camden expanding and becoming more relevant every year. I see CPH Docs moving to a more advantageous time of the year and having an even more, potentially more of an impact globally. I see other festivals popping up here and there. Frames of Representation in London started this year. I don't know. There's multiple festivals. I mean, I program in New York and try to show these types of movies, and I have stiff competition from other institutions. I don't see any, like, I don't see any dip in appetite for this sort of thing. And I certainly wouldn't call it a fad either. Like, I mean, this is not like the Rubik's Cube. This is not like some – I mean, this is not like a – I don't know. It's hard to call it a fad when it's still something that a small-ish group of people are being really passionate about and trying to get more people to care about. That comes from passion, and I think that comes from invention. You know, if really interesting, exciting things are being made that people want to put out there and have people talk about, that's legitimate. You know, I don't think that's like it's a trend and it's kind of cool. Because if anything, I go to a lot of these festivals, and I know you do too. The films that are somehow seem to be trying to capitalize on this moment and make a movie that's like this tend to disappear. It's not like, oh, I'll make a hybrid doc and that'll be super cool and I'll be part of this moment. I think there are people who are thinking that, but they're not good movies. So,
right. I don't know. How do you grow this audience?
I feel like you have a better chance of answering that than I do. I mean, I'm trying to understand exactly how the audience has grown here at True False. In fact, I'm going to be writing a story over the next probably by the time this podcast airs, there will be a story in Film Comment about trying to take some of the lessons of to learn from what film festivals have done, some of the film festivals like True False have done, and how they have found an audience for the films. Because I don't think it's magic. You know, I think it's work. I think it's development over time. I think it's not talking down to an audience, and it's not talking down to the works that you're showing. I happen to think that film festivals don't have to be their own. They don't have to be isolated from the rest of the business. I think that what film festivals are doing right is something that the rest of the business can learn from. And I'd like to have a better understanding of what it is to be learned.
So I feel like viewing as a films as a programmer is a little different than mm-hmm. just watching movies maybe as a film critic or mm-hmm. just as a film lover. Mm-hmm. Has that had an impact on you having this new title, the way that you look at movies? Is
it shifted? I mean, I definitely have a sense of my ultimate opinion about the film may not be the only relevant thing about the movie and about whether or not we should show it, how it may belong in our calendar. I mean, I think that comes from conversations that I have with David and how we overlap a lot in our tastes, but not entirely. And so if either one of us wants to sort of push for something, we respect that and support that. We also have some outside curators who program certain series, and often they're coming with films that I may not have great familiarity with or great interest in, but sometimes, but I think that often can work out quite well. I've become more aware of, thinking a little bit beyond whatever my criterion is and wondering whether or not it's not even a matter of like showing movies I don't like, because that's actually not what I mean. It's more of, oh, I'm going to check out this movie because I can imagine that if it's good, that could be good for our audience, you know, rather than, am I going to have a chance to write a feature about this film? Or am I going to have a chance to write about this film for some publication? And if I don't and it doesn't seem like a good fit, I won't even bother. But now I'm actually going to watch some of those movies with the idea that, like, oh, that could be a good fit. You know, that could work in a series that we're trying to do.
One other thing I wanted to talk about with MOMI and programming in general, documentaries. I feel like even in Columbia, I program at the Ragtag Cinema, and we're frequently approached by local nonprofit organizations who are wanting to collaborate, and they usually suggest a documentary. It is a documentary frequently that we have no interest in presenting to our audience because it tends to be sort of a dump, an information dump. you might think that Columbia, given that it's like, you know, how much it's been immersed in sort of these creative nonfiction films, that they might have gotten over this idea that documentary is a means of delivering information, but that's not the case here. I'm wondering if that's something that you experience with your audience too. Is there something you think that's something you can change people's perspectives on?
There are a couple things to say about that. I mean, I feel like for me, as somebody who has been writing about documentaries for several years, and like, which I should say, I mean, I credit True False and you personally, and along for making me feel that there was that was being recognized and seen. You know, like I cared about documentaries. I care about being a good critic for documentaries and respecting what they are and where they're coming from individually for years. And when I was first invited to True False, that was I felt acknowledged in that way. And I think since then I've felt emboldened to keep going. So I'll say that. But then, so in that span of time, since then, I get approached all the time by documentary publicists for documentaries that are like, oh, I see you write about documentaries. Will you write about this thing? And it'll be this information dump type of film that you're talking about. And I'm always like, that's not – you're not paying attention. Like, that's actually not what I'm doing here. In fact, like, I often speak against that sort of film when it's bad filmmaking. So that extends, sure. I think that my writing on documentaries has certainly overlapped with some of my programming of documentaries, and so there's some carryover there in terms of what I might do as a programmer. You get approached about stuff. I don't feel any pressure to do that, and when it can be a film that I do have some respect for, that we can also put a screening together that could do some good. I'm all for that. But I mean. Yeah, it may not happen quite as often as it happens the way that you're describing for me. We also at the museum we program Friday through Sunday during the week. We'll often do one-off screenings for certain films that are either coming out soon or that have a certain amount of buzz around them that we can, you know, have a special screening for. And sometimes that'll happen around a documentary. I'm not opposed to that, you know, if it's something that I feel like our audience will go for. That's what it comes down to. If it's something that our audience might want to see and we think there's some value in it, then that's something we would consider. But too often these are films that I don't think our audience would really turn out for.
Have you ever pushed your audience too far?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, of course.
How does that usually go? And what is it that usually...
Well, I don't push too far. I mean, to me, it's always a game of like, if you're going to try something, when are you showing it? You know, sometimes I feel like that's the mistake. Like I'm showing it at the wrong time, or I showed it on a day against something that was going to be more of a draw. But it's tough because sometimes it's the only time you can get it on the calendar is a moment where it's a little bit soft. So you can get it on the calendar and then it doesn't really work out necessarily. I don't know if I pushed them too far, like there was a big negative reaction.
You're listening to the True False podcast presented by KBIA. In this episode, we're talking with film critic and curator Eric Hines. Coming up, Eric talks about drone shots.
The worst trend in documentary.
That's it.
For me, documentary is like the deepest listening project. Like it is being very sensitive to the human story. There's a word in Judaism, which is shliach. It means messenger. And I feel like that is my, like I'm a messenger to the human story. But at heart, you know, it's just the deep presence and attention. To the story, to human story. You know, I was saying my dad died a month ago, and in Judaism we mark the day, the week, the month, and the year. And during the month, as part of the mourning custom, I didn't see any movies. And I didn't go to theater, and I didn't go to parties, and I haven't shaved. And I've been much more just internal. But it just so happens that on the eve of True False, that 30-day mourning period ended. So on the 31st day, I rose up from the month of mourning, and I said, where do I want to be? I want to be here at True False. I want to be with the documentary love community and you know, be inspired by art and story. And so that's why I'm here now.
What perfect timing.
I know. Cosmic.
You just heard a soundscape by Tim Pilcher. He spoke with Sandy Dabowski at True False 2017. Sandy's a seasoned filmmaker and he served as a mentor for True False's SWAMI program, which helps new nonfiction filmmakers navigate the world of documentary. Now, let's get back to the episode.
Documentary forum, where it's going.
One small matter that we should get to.
I'm going to try
Let's
to load it down to one.
Let's talk about the history of documentary and talk about the form of it. Yeah.
The idea, so you, I think around the time that you probably started writing about film was the time that, you know, Inconvenient Truth, this sort of like this wave of documentaries that were trying to change the world. Should documentaries try to change the world?
Jeez. No, I start going. I start flashing to Bono in moments like this. You know, was that lyric? Do you really think a pop song can really? Do you think a pop song can really change the world? Should documentaries try to change the world? Chris Bachman, I think documentaries should be what they want to be and be what they need to be. I think. If the subject of the film is changing the world, then you should come up with some form within documentary that can adequately achieve that. I don't know many movies that actually have that as a thesis. So therefore, I think it's a bit unrealistic and outscale and outsized and hubristic to talk about changing the world. Can you make a film that, you know, can be talked about and that can start a conversation in the real world? Sure. You know, can you make a film about something that's happening somewhere that not enough people know about and you're exposing that to people? Sure. Is there a certain way of thinking and being that you can also make a film about? Sure. But the idea that like you're making it's such a loaded question you're asking me that like it's it's actually quite a bad question, Chris, because there's no way to answer this. But I do think that like the the notion are you asking me about impact? Do you want to talk about impact? Because we can talk about impact.
You say it's a dumb question, but is this not a question that funders are talking?
Well, let's talk about funding then. Let's talk about funding. Now, well, whether or not documentaries can change the world, as I sit here and try to like have some sort of spin out of control and some political, careful way, not crap all over filmmakers who are actually trying to make some sort of difference. Like they can do that all they want, and they should if that's what they have the power to do. Funders, of course, want – a lot of the time they have a vested interest in some cause or issue or some notion of quote-unquote impact being achieved through documentary film, and they don't just want to know what the film's going to be, but they want to know like what the plan is after the film is made for bringing it out into communities and all that. And I'm not going to listen, whatever it has to be done and however you want to do it, I'm okay with that. But I tend to not really care except for if the movie's any good, and if it's effective and if it moves me and if it's, that's where I come from. That's what I care about. I'm not going to say, and there are films that I have loved that I think are phenomenal works of art that have some sort of campaign involved with it in terms of real world impact or have funding from an organization that wanted to get behind it, and that's fine. I think a filmmaker should get money where they can get it. It's hard to make a movie. I hope that the filmmakers who I care about and have a lot to bring don't have to make too many compromises in terms of what they want to do to cater to the demands and the expectations of some of those funders. And I would caution against getting too far involved with any organization that wants to get too involved in your process and get too involved in what you're doing. I don't know how to say it other than that. You know, you and I are in the same mind about like, that's not where we're coming from and that's not what we care about. But the reality of the business is such that when they can complement each other, when it can work well together, go for it, you know?
I think that by moving our kinds, you're changing the world. that's my own personal approach.
Yeah.
Okay. My last attempt to make this...
What, to get me to say something?
Yeah, I want you to say something that you're going to regret. What
the look on your face, the look on your face as you do this is really amazing.
What's the worst trend in documentary right now?
Oh, man. The worst trend in documentary. I'll be flip and just say the drone shots.
That's it?
I was actually talking about this with Robert Greene yesterday and how he's doing some drone work in his next film, or might. And beyond my first initial of like, oh, God, another drone shot in a documentary in 2016, like just because you have access to this thing doesn't mean it should be in your movie. I actually don't need an establishing shot all the time. You know, filmmaking often really benefits from lack of establishing shots. But then, after that gets, if you get that out of the way, then it's like, okay, well, actually, can you do something creative? Can you do something actually creative with this? Can you show me something that I've not seen before? Can you use this tool in a way that makes me see something differently than just this is a cool shot? I could care less about cool shots ever. Maybe I can make this into a bigger thing, which is, I want with documentaries. And this can extend to narrative too. I feel like whatever you're doing should be an extension of trying to serve the subject and trying to serve the overarching goal of the film. You know, rather than if you have access to a drone camera, you use it, or you have access to a certain budget, you use it in a certain way. In order to make a let's get into something else. I mean, in order to make a documentary that people are going to see about a community or about a lot of complicated things, I have to make it into a three-character study, and I have to weave three stories together, and there you've got a documentary movie. If you're going to do that, it's because it's the best way to get at exactly what you're trying to get at, not because this is how you make a documentary. So I've made my way into another thing, which I think is that trend. I can make it about a three-character interweaving story, but it's actually something bigger than that. It's some notion of like what is the box that you can put this story into that is familiar to people or that will quote-unquote work. I would just always challenge filmmakers to not think that way and not feel like they need to end up there, because a lot of times you don't think you're going to start there and you don't start there and you end up there in some way. The idea of putting individual experiences into a single box or a familiar package. I mean, I actually said this in a class yesterday. Nothing makes me more depressed in watching movies than the notion of individual unique experience fitting into some familiar form, because I think it's where it runs against the entire power of documentary film.
Down with cool shots and boxes. Okay. Eric, I'm so grateful that you took time out of your schedule to join us.
Oh, Chris, it was a pleasure.
Eric Hines writes a column for Film Comment called Make It Real. That's filmcomment.com. You can also find his work in the New York Times, Washington Post, and elsewhere. You can review this podcast by visiting our iTunes page. Join us again as we discuss a different aspect of the art and craft of nonfiction storytelling. We want to thank Eric and Chris for the interview. This episode was produced by Mary McIntyre and edited by Bram Sablesmith and Ryan Vermeulener. Our music was created by Tim Pilcher using sounds of True False. We also featured the song Into the Light by Marissa Anderson. Special thanks to Claire Banderas, Steve Dawson, and Sarah Kellogg. I'm Allison Kofeld. Thanks for listening.